Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Mmm, boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty? Mmm, and sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object.
Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at SweetTango.com.
Hello and welcome to Dining with Death. This episode is on our playlist, Dining with the Disappeared, where we talk about people who have vanished. We discuss the circumstances surrounding their disappearance, and then we talk a little bit about the place they disappeared from. I'm Stacey Lee. Let's begin. On a summer night in June of 2011, 20-year-old Lauren Spearer goes out for a night of fun and drinking with her friends. What starts out as a normal evening turns into a tragedy that remains unsolved to this day. Lauren Spearer was born on January 17, 1991, in Scarsdale, New York. She graduated from Edgemont High in 2009 and then enrolled at Indiana University. She was active in the Jewish community and even went to Israel over spring break to plant trees as part of a work mission there. She had a boyfriend named Jesse Wolf, and they spent time with Lauren's good friend Jay Rosenbaum and other friends doing all of the usual things that college kids do. On June 3rd, 2011, the group goes out for some drinks in Bloomington, Indiana, after drinking at home for a while. Lauren leaves her apartment around 12:30 a.m. with her friend David Rohn. They went to Jay Rosenbaum's apartment, and then they met up with his neighbor, Corey Rossman. At 1:46 a.m., they enter Kilroy's Sports Bar. They stay until almost 2:30 a.m., and people report seeing Lauren leave the bar with Corey Rossman. So Lauren apparently is plastered at this point. She can barely stand up. She is so drunk that she leaves her shoes and her phone at the bar. I mean, that is, you know, you're gone when you're leaving your phone and your shoes behind. Corey and Lauren walked to Lauren's apartment complex called Smallwood Plaza, and a passerby named Zach Oakes noticed how drunk Lauren was and asked if she was okay. Lauren tells this Good Samaritan that yes, she's fine, and you know, she's obviously with a friend who she apparently knows, and so he lets her go and they walk off. Corey and Lauren go inside Lauren's apartment for a little bit, and then security cameras catch them leaving Lauren's apartment at 2:48 a.m. Lauren and Corey walk down this alleyway that runs between College Avenue and Morton Street. They come out of this alleyway and they head down it and into this vacant lot that leads near Corey's apartment building. Lauren and Corey then arrive at Corey's apartment where Corey's roommate, Michael Beth, helps them inside. Corey is so drunk that he throws up all over the floor in his house. So not only is Lauren, you know, tanked, but Corey is too. Corey's roommate, Michael, helps him upstairs and gets him into bed. He then says that he pleads with Lauren to stay on the couch because she's way too drunk to walk home alone, and it's such a late hour. Lauren wouldn't stay, insisting that she wanted to sleep in her own bed, and she leaves the apartment. I'm going to reserve my judgment on that one. Now, Michael does the right thing here in that he calls Jay Rosenbaum, Lauren's good friend, and he tells him, hey, Lauren is headed your way and she is plastered. He tells Jay, you need to take care of her. Lauren actually goes to Jay's apartment and he immediately sees how drunk she is. She also has a bruise under her eye and he assumes that she's fallen down somewhere. This must have been a really close, tight-knit little group because she's walking around without her phone and barefoot. I mean, if I saw someone in that condition, it would be... you're done. You're going to bed. Lauren uses a phone in the apartment to start calling some of her other friends because she wants to keep drinking. It's 3:30 in the morning at this point, and so of course no one picks up. Around 4:30 a.m., Lauren leaves Jay's apartment. Now, again, I'm not trying to beat up on these guys. I'm not saying that what ends up happening is their fault. I was thinking in the beginning that maybe Lauren's apartment was just downstairs or something like that, but apparently that's not the case. Jay lets Lauren leave, hammered and barefoot, without her phone. And to make matters worse, she tells him that she can't find her keys. But again, she's an adult, you know? It's not somebody else's responsibility to force you to do something when you're in that condition. But You know, I'm just saying, if I had a good friend in that condition, I would hope that I would force them to stay. Jay watches Lauren as she walks across the street, and he last sees her at the intersection of 11th Street and College Avenue. Lauren Spearer then vanishes into thin air and is never seen again. The next morning, Lauren's boyfriend, Jesse, sends a text to her phone, and he gets a reply, but it's not from Lauren. It's an employee at Kilroy's bar saying, "Hello, this is whoever's phone, and we have it." So Jesse starts looking around for Lauren. No one can find her, and he realizes there's a problem, and he calls the police to report Lauren missing. For the next several weeks, police, family, and friends search high and low for Lauren. Her purse and her keys are actually found in the alley she and Corey had walked through. So she was so drunk, she left her phone and her shoes at the bar, and then walking through the alleyway, just dropped her purse and her keys and left him there. Now, this made me wonder if there was a possibility that she could have been drugged at the bar. But some additional information comes out. We'll talk about it in a second. Everyone from the bar is interviewed. Everyone from the apartment complexes are interviewed. Lauren's friends, her family, everyone who knows her talks to the police. No one knows what happened to Lauren Spearer. In August of 2011, 2 months after the disappearance, police organize and perform a 9-day search of the Sycamore Ridge landfill in Pimento, just south of Terre Haute. They have some tips and some reason to believe that Lauren's remains might be located there.
Wilmington police didn't have much to say about the search for missing IU student Lauren Spear at Wednesday's press conference after their two most promising leads were dismissed on Monday. WTIU's Alex Roy has more.
Bloomington Police Captain Joe Qualters says the search for Lauren Spear is not winding down.
Bottom line is that the search efforts do in fact continue, and the need for volunteers is still there.
As the search continues into more expansive areas of land outside Bloomington's city limits, the need for volunteers is growing.
I am extremely disappointed by the fact that only one of Lauren's friends have called the police department, the Bloomington Police Department, with any information.
In an effort to make it even easier to report tips, the Spears have established a post office box where confidential anonymous information can be sent.
It should be addressed to Find Lauren. The P.O. box number is 1226. It's in Bloomington, Indiana, and the zip code is 47402-1226.
The search for Lauren is now in its third week, and police say they do not have any credible leads. For WTIU News, I'm Alex Roy.
Again, if you have any information, the address is below. Find Lauren Spear, P.O. Box 1226, Bloomington, Indiana 47402.
The Indiana University Police and the FBI took part in that search. After 9 days of searching, nothing was found.
Students moving into the apartment building where missing IU student Lauren Spearer lived at the time of her disappearance say they're aware of the search for her, WTIU's Gretchen Frazee reports.
Students are beginning to move their belongings back into Smallwood Apartments in Bloomington, where Lauren Spearer lived before she went missing this past June. Many of the students were not in town over the summer, but they say the incident is on their minds.
We talked about it more during the summertime, but we've still been talking about it. And I know my roommate and I are going to go to a safety awareness seminar later today.
Other female students say they will take extra precautions when they go out this year.
I'm not too worried about it, although I do feel really bad about the situation, and I think everyone should be careful.
Yeah, again, I'm not really worried. I don't think the campus has changed. I was here last year and everything was fine. Although we never go out alone, we always use the buddy system. We're roommates and we stick together.
One mother said her son won't let a girl walk home alone. Spear's parents have put up new signs throughout the city this week in hopes students might provide information on their daughter's whereabouts. For WTIU, I'm Gretchen Frazee.
Months go by and then years. In 2015, a man was arrested for murdering another IU student, Hannah Wilson. He was investigated but ultimately dismissed as a suspect in Lauren's disappearance. In January 2016, the FBI gets a tip that leads them to Martinsville, about 20 miles north of Bloomington. A man living there with his parents, named Justin Wagers, had been exposing himself to numerous local women, and some thought he might be involved in Lauren's case. So cops take cadaver dogs to the residence where this guy lives, and they have the dogs go all over the property, and they actually hit on a location in the barn. The police then bring in anthropologists who start digging. They dig and dig, you know, thinking maybe they'll find some sign of Lauren, but nothing is ever found. So that's still very interesting. We've got a guy here out in Indiana living in the rural area somewhere who has cadaver dogs that have hit on a spot in his barn. I mean, whether it has anything to do with Lauren or not, that's still really interesting. Despite all of these attempts to locate her, the searches, the police involvement, absolutely no trace of Lauren Spear has ever been found. She has now been missing for just over 10 years. Now, there are quite a few theories as to what happened to Lauren. Her parents believe she is dead. They also have voiced their opinion that they feel she was drugged. Now, I kind of was thinking the same thing because she was so out of it. The problem with that theory is that it came out from people that were close to Lauren that she did on occasion use drugs, and she had actually been sent home from a summer camp one year because she'd been caught with drugs. So, you know, if she was drinking and also doing other things, she could have been, you know, in a really bad state. Lauren's parents have voiced suspicion about the men Lauren was with that night, including her boyfriend, because all of them retained lawyers after the disappearance and refused to take a polygraph test. Honestly, I know this is not what people like Lauren's parents want to hear, but that's exactly what you should do in a situation like this. You should get a lawyer. I'm not saying don't cooperate and don't talk to the police, not saying that at all, but you should be represented. And polygraphs, you know how I feel about those. But the notion that anyone who hires a lawyer when they're involved in a case like this, that's a sign of guilt, it's ridiculous. Anyone who knows anything about the law or about crime knows that you should be represented. It doesn't mean you shouldn't talk to the police. It doesn't mean you should withhold information, but it means you should be represented and you should listen to your representative, to your counsel. That's what they're there for while the police are questioning you. Some of the men claim they did, in fact, end up taking polygraph tests, but who knows what the results were. Now, the obvious theory in this disappearance is that some predator was in the area, saw this poor woman wandering around off her face, and picked her up and did God knows what with her. Lauren's parents actually ended up filing lawsuits, civil lawsuits, against a lot of the men that Lauren had been with that night. In the law, there is something called duty of care. And if you're going to allege that someone is responsible for a bad thing that happens to someone else, you have to prove that they had what is called duty of care. And these men did not. They're not Lauren's guardians. They're not, you know, legally responsible for her. And in the law is about what you can prove. And they could not prove duty of care. So the lawsuits were dismissed. Now, the law doesn't have any jurisdiction over whether or not you decide to choose to be a good friend and help someone out when they're in that kind of condition. And I mean, let's be honest, that's the right thing to do. You don't let somebody wander off when they're that drunk. That said, the police say that all three of the men, Corey, Jay, and Jesse, have been forthcoming and they have been interviewed over and over. As of right now, Lauren Spearer is still a missing person. Police have never arrested anyone for her disappearance, and the case has gone stone cold. One officer that has worked the case from the beginning said that he fears they might never know what happened to Lauren. There are simply no clues. If you have any information on the disappearance of Lauren Spearer, please call 812-339-4477. You can remain anonymous. Any information that you have might help. So if you have anything at all, do the right thing and make that call. We're going to talk a little bit about the location involved in this case, just like we always do on this channel. Lauren was last seen at Kilroy's on Kirkwood. Kilroy's is a very typical college bar, and even more specifically, a very typical Midwestern college bar. They have $8 pitchers and $20 Long Island fish bowls and all the other cheap drinks for college students. They have daily specials on drinks, and they are dirt cheap. They even have $5 cocktails on Wednesdays. They also have a bar food menu. It features things like beer battered fries, buffalo chicken dip, and chicken strips, along with burgers, tacos, and grilled cheese. The food is cheap and carby and probably perfect for college kids who have had a few. The Kilroy's website and Instagram pages are loaded with photos of smiling college kids holding drinks and doing hot wings challenges. It calls itself the number one college bar in the nation, and their tagline is, "It's not a bar, it's a lifestyle." Well, okay, Kilroy's. Their website says the bar is part of the Safe Bar Network, which is a network of alcohol-serving venues that strive to ensure everyone has a safe night out by not over-serving guests, which we know isn't really a thing at college bars, and by watching to make sure everyone is safe with the people that they're at the bar with. Honestly, these types of bars at my age look like the seventh circle of hell, but I'm sure if you're 20 years old, 25 years old, they're great. It looks like a fun place to hang out and watch sports and get some cheap food and drinks. It's also a place that unfortunately will forever be tied to the disappearance of a beautiful young woman who most likely spent her last night on Earth there. Thank you for joining me today on Dining with Death, Dining with the Disappeared. Please like and subscribe if you enjoy the channel. Be safe and be kind to each other, and I'll see you next time on Dining with Death. Bye.